حفظه. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته. And السلام عليكم to your listeners.
Well, let's start with the big, big story, and that is the attempted coup in Turkey. How did the Arab media respond to this?
In very different ways and very diverse ways, depending again on the influence that the rest of the Arab world had on the politics in the region or the alignment to the different issues in the region as well. So based on that, you found that media in the Levant area responded very differently to media in the Gulf region, for example. We found that Egypt and many of the Gulf states responded by saying that this was the military taking back the government, taking back control of Turkey, whereas you found in areas like Jordan they sided on the front of more caution and said that there was an attempt at a coup. So countries in the region responded very differently based on their political and military allegiance to Turkey as well as to the Syrian issue, which is at the forefront. However, many of them did point out that Turkey, and something we reported on in the Middle East report a few weeks back, even when we had the Ataturk airport bombings, we spoke about Turkey being in Syria, having serious deficiencies with a democracy, with a governance itself, and that the governance itself was a key issue of what could cause issues and problems in the future. Of course, no one could foresee at that stage that it was going to be something like an unsuccessful coup, as has happened this weekend. So the media in the region responded, and again, much of the media in the Middle East, our listeners need to understand this, are ruled by a very heavy hand of politics and governance, more so than many other areas or regions of the world. So what you found on the front of your newspaper in Egypt saying that the military was taking back power or taking control of the country as it needed to do, or that the coup was already successful and that was pronounced amateurishly hours beforehand, this all had to do with the government's role and hand in media.
Now, in the main, how did the media respond to the Turkish president's allegation that Fethullah Gulen and his movement was behind the attempted coup? I see some reports suggesting that Turkey went to the point of saying, we don't need to provide any evidence. It's as clear as the sun, and no one requires evidence to prove that the sun exists. Is this allegation being tested, or is it being accepted in the main in Arab media?
I think in Arab media, again, they side on both sides. Again, this depends very much on a philosophical, even on a spiritual, religious level, where you're finding that people from different religious denominations or ideologies, even within Islam, are choosing to side with or against the Gulen movement, not only on a religious or spiritual front, but also on a humanitarian side. Those siding with and saying the work he's done or the education that he's provided for millions of people, whereas there are others who are counteracting this and saying no, that this is just a movement that is cultish, that it's funded primarily and wholly by the United States government and administration, that it's playing and has played for the last 10 or 15 years into the hands of the Israeli government. There are those that are blaming still the Turkish government, Erdogan, and saying that with him now having decided to sign on these deals with Israel, Turkey will become a much more dangerous and conflicted region and will cause people within its own country to now be stacked up against each other, against the odds, if you will. So people or Arab media is responding to it differently, very much diverse as they responded to the entire coup itself. In many instances, and what's interesting is in parts of the Middle East, not much mention as much as it was played out, for example, in British media or American media about Gulen himself, but rather more the focus on Turkey, its strategic role. In Europe, they focused more on the EU and the role of Turkey wanting to be part of the EU and whether or not the condition or the stipulation he put out for Syrian individuals to gain Turkish citizenship will still stand, whether Turkey was now closer or further away from becoming part of the EU. But if you came back to the Middle East itself and how the media reported on it, yes, he was brought up and he has been in the last decade part of media circles. As one media analyst in the Middle East put it out, he said, we're tired of this Gulen rhetoric, we're tired of this Gulen story, and one Erdogan said that he actually called it hogwash, that it was time for Turkey to stand up. And he was against, not against the coup, but he was against any form of human rights violation that could come to the fore post the unsuccessful coup. So people are very lukewarm and they're very different about and diverse about whether or not Gulen was at the forefront, whether or not Turkey should be responding and should or should not be defending itself on the accusation of the role of Gulen with the media or maybe not with the military itself.
Where does all of this leave Erdogan post the attempted coup? We know there was a time at the height of his success where he was almost given the mantle of sainthood in some ways. Then there were all these question marks with regards to recent deals with Israel. His hand seems to be strengthened now.
Oh yes, it does indeed. It does indeed. And that's something that I think human rights movements will be watching out very carefully, as well as other countries and countries especially that have diplomatic and now increasing political ties, countries such as Israel, or perhaps the cooling down of negotiation and deals and diplomatic ties with Egypt. All of these countries will be watching Turkey with a very hawkish eye in the coming days and weeks. We've seen, as it has been in the first state, as you mentioned, when Erdogan reached a state almost of sainthood amongst his people, as seen as the savior. And it's now been brought out, especially during the coup, but immediately thereafter, that Erdogan on a media level, and again, here we're looking at it, neither on the part of anyone nor again, but purely from a media angle. We're looking at thinking about the images that came out, the statements that came out, the quotations that came out post the coup itself, and again, hailing Erdogan as a leader, as an example for the Ummah. And I think that if we look at it for myself in media and journalism for 18 odd years, I could clearly say that never in this time have I seen such a stance of Muslims coming together and being united on the front. We're in an ummah, as the Arab media played that story out on Saturday very clearly, an ummah that's been hurting, an ummah that's been scarred, especially in the last 5 to 6 years. And now to have something like this, where the Adhan is being called out more than 25 times from the minaras in Istanbul, and getting people to come out onto the streets and to pray together. So there's very much this conflict amongst people. On one side, yes, they want to hail the efforts he's made, or that the people, the Turkish people, despite their differences, have been coming together. But there's also that cautionary nod and saying, well, we need to be very careful between the actions and the man. Do we differentiate between the two? And how now will this all play out? Over 700 military personnel and those involved, including those aligned to attachés, in foreign attachés, will now be questioned. There's also been the news story going out that Erdogan may even impose on them the death penalty for some of them, though it's not fully confirmed at this stage. So how does this all play out? Will there be human rights violation? Will there be an iron fist ruling Turkey? Turkey knows very well how to quash a military coup. It's done that in the period of the last 30 or 40 years, at least 4 or 5 times, so it knows how to handle this very clearly and very well. The question that many analysts are asking now is, with the role of the step that Erdogan took, was this more to side and bring in people from different ideologies and different political differences? And he was successful in that. How he will handle this now on the way forward in the coming hours and days will be instrumental in whether Turkey becomes a police state, whether the military then has an opportunity to come back and try again, because Erdogan clearly stated it's not really over as yet. Also, how will Erdogan deal with very important issues, pressing issues? There's serious deficiencies in the human rights system, in the judicial system, in the rule of law system, in democracy, in governance. So this will now really clearly, I think, dictate for us his way forward for the next few months, whether it's in terms of political allegiances with countries in the neighborhood, a neighboring area. It's going to be very crucial for Turkey in the coming days and week.
And then a quick update on the Syrian front.
Gosh, there's so much to say on that, but I just thought, you know, we haven't had much time in the recent weeks to touch down. So very quickly, remembering that the northern city of Aleppo is being besieged by rebel-held parts, as it's called. There's very little supplies reaching the tens of thousands of civilians. More than 300,000 people live there. That's Syria's second city. It's a story we've covered numerous times on Radio Islam itself. There's fears that this could lead to starvation. Again, alternative media has been covering it, mainstream media now covering it, as the United Nations are very concerned, as well as the British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. Complete areas in its neighborhood, the eastern neighborhood in particular, is completely besieged. So they're concerned about humanitarian supplies getting in, whether or not people will be starved as they were in Yarmouk. Again, sad that people are just becoming statistics, unfortunately. There has been reports of civilians, including children, that have been killed, and reports where Aleppo's revolutionary groups are sending out a joint statement saying that Aleppo is now 100% besieged. So we're going to have to follow up on that. There's residents complaining of food shortages, and then shopkeepers who are rationing their products. Very tragic state that the Syrians find themselves in now.
And finally, we are going to talk to Yusuf about it in greater detail, but how has the Pokemon Go craze been viewed in the region?
Gosh, yes, that's another story, and I know my cousin would handle that very well on the level of the social media itself. When we look at how it's been handled from the Arab world or the Middle East world, we could safely say that many of the Arab authorities are putting out a very iron-fisted hand, and rightly so. We've heard of accidents and traumas and even deaths involved in it. It's the Middle East also being swept up by this. We know, as we have heard of people from around the world, where people are going into the masjid actually to continue with this game, Muslim and non-Muslim. Egypt's national defense and security officials are saying that it is a disguise as an innocent application for entertainment, but there's hidden purposes that citizens should be aware of spying from other countries and people. So all of this has brought security specialists in the Middle East to get scrambling, as government officials are freaking out about this, and they're saying that it does and it will pose a threat to national security. We also know there's investigations to put together a bill by Egypt's legislature to restrict social media platforms and to prohibit what they call dangerous smartphone apps. So Egypt's going to work on that to ensure it's not a threat to their national security. According to the deputy chief of Al-Azhar, one of Egypt's top Islamic ulama, a shiuch, he says that spending time with this game is on par with drinking alcohol, which is prohibited in Islam. He's also saying that it negatively influences people and that they're now neglecting their salah as a result, and their work as a result of being overly consumed with Pokemon Go. Saudi Arabia's Grand Mufti had one time back, if you recall, a rule that the Pokemon cards were forbidden, and that the cards that the children were displaying had crosses and stars of David and that other religions, and that we should not be playing those games. And finally, Kuwait also had added to the regional clampdown on what they call pocket monsters. Kuwait issued a statement warning users not to take photos of sensitive security locations in the region. It's a very sensitive topic, Molana, for the region itself, that has a lot of upheaval happening every moment on the go as we talk.
Hafid, as always, Jazakumullah for the update. Much appreciated.
You're most welcome. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.